Welcome to Is This Real Life? A Bravo podcast that relates our favorite shows to our own lives and the world around us. I'm your host, Mandy Slutsker. Let's get to it. Hi, everyone. I hope you had a wonderful week. I am so excited for this week's episode. I have Dan James on to discuss some stuff going on in Potomac and the whole, I guess what we're now calling the Vanderpump Rules cinematic universe, because we've now have this offshoot, The Valley, and it is something to see. If you are not watching The Valley, there have only been 3 episodes, I think, thus far. Go ahead, watch it. It is so interesting. It's actually a lot different than what I was expecting. Also, there's now Vanderpump Villa on Hulu. I have just given up my Hulu subscription. So if folks are watching it and they think it's good, definitely let me know. But thus far, I feel like I have my hands full with everything on Bravo and Peacock. The one thing that Dan and I didn't get a chance to discuss was Summer House, Martha's Vineyard. I love this show. I am so into it. It continues to deliver every single time. We're only on the second season, so go back, watch the first season. There's not that many episodes. It's great. Almost all the same people are back the second season, so you get to know the characters. This week, the new girl, Noella, she held a decades theme party, and it was just very funny. I don't think these are like the Summer House Long Island folks in the Hamptons, that where they come for the weekend, they know in advance, they Amazon Prime a bunch of outfits. Like, these people just took whatever they had and tried to make it decades theme. And I just, it was so funny. I said last week that I'm afraid of Shanice, that I don't trust her energy. And I feel like this week has proven, you know, a little right, where she freaked out at Summer for saying, Summer like said that she was the worst dressed, and she just like went from 0 to 60, was crying, talking about how she lost her job and doesn't have money for clothes, which is like, I empathize with that very much. However, I am thinking that the reason, so she moved from Texas to Tampa, and then like they relocated her for work, and then she lost her job. I think it's because she wanted to go on this show, and maybe she didn't have enough vacation days. Maybe the company didn't want to be associated with the reality TV show. I don't know, but I would bet like a lot of money that that is why she was let go. Alex says he was creeped out by Summer taking a photo of him while they were hanging out and sending it to Jordan. Yeah, I guess it's a little weird, but if you're excited to be hanging out with Summer, why do you care that other people know? I think it's kind of odd that Alex wants to keep everything on the down low, doesn't want anyone to know what he's doing. That to me is a little bit more of like maybe an orange flag or a yellow flag. I'm like, I don't know about that. And then I just can't get over it. Noelle is very sweet. She's a lot like me in terms of not knowing what things mean all the time, because there's a lot of new phrases that people use for dating without saying dating. So they'll be like, oh, I'm talking to this person. Well, what does that actually mean when you're talking to someone? I talk to, you know, people at work. But if you mean you're fooling around with them, you're being like sexually intimate with them, like there's so many new words for that. And so Summer was like, yeah, we were hanging out. And, you know, Noelle was like, okay, like didn't realize that meant that they had slept together. And Summer is annoyed that Noelle didn't catch on. And I don't know, I'm on Noelle's side with this. Like, you should be able to say exactly what happened without just leaning on phrases, because they do mean different things to different people, especially in different regions of the country. At least when I was younger, people would, you know, say hooking up, and it could mean something like making out. And to other people, it meant having sex. And so it's just better to be like, yes, I slept with him, and I don't care if you're interested, but you should know the background. Like, not that big of a deal. And then, of course, Nick was handsy with the ladies. I feel like this was an issue last year when they didn't know he had a girlfriend and he was being very flirty. So the episode ends with him walking into a room where Summer and Jordan are taking a nap and asking if he's ever made them feel uncomfortable, which to which they say, like, yeah, you know, especially like being uncomfortable trying to take a nap and having someone like lurch in your room and stare at you sleeping. That's pretty uncomfortable. And finally, I'm so proud of Jordan for opening up about having alopecia and how that's been affecting her. I loved the scene with her and her dad talking about the brand deal that she got. He seems so sweet. I hope she is on Watch What Happens Live soon and that he is in the audience because I love a supportive parent. Speaking of supportive parents, I was really lucky enough to go to this fashion show at the Montgomery, like Westfield Montgomery Mall, that Ashley Darby was in. And I got to meet Ashley Darby's mom, Sheila, which was very sweet. And everyone was there. Uncle Lump was there. It was fabulous. I spent some time talking to Dan about the outing, but just at the end of the day, these people are regular people and they tend to be quite nice, I've found. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. So if I hear of any other events going on in the DMV area, I will definitely post them on my Instagram. I know that there is a big party coming up on Monday, April 15th for Below Deck. So it's I think it's maybe a viewing party. I don't know, but it's hosted by Brandon, who had been on the show before and is on this season as a guest again. So I will post information about that. I don't think I'm able to attend that due to some work things that I cannot change, but everyone else should definitely go because these events are so fun. All right. As always, if you enjoy the podcast, go ahead, give it a 5-star rating and leave a kind review. If you want to reach out to me to share your thoughts or provide some, you know, kind words or constructive criticism, you can reach me at Mandy Slutsker on Instagram. I'm also on Twitter, but I lurk there a bit more and I really try to avoid it because it is a cesspool. Okay, we will take a quick break and then back with Dan James. Hi, everyone. I'm here with Dan James, who is a comedian and writer based in Toronto. He also has a background working in public health, so we love to bond over that. But listening to his accent, you'll realize he's not from Canada. He's actually from across the pond in the UK. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it's so nice chatting with you. I reached out to you a while ago and was like, we need to talk about all these things going on. And then just last week, I was like, can we change a recording time? Because I got invited to a fashion show at the Westfield Montgomery Mall that was being hosted by Ashley Darby. And I'm one of her guests, and that I was like, I gotta see this fashion show.
Well, first of all, this does absolutely track with like a Potomac event. Like, it's always in a mall in a suburb at like 3 p.m., which I love. How was it? What happened?
So it was great. It was in a mall in a suburb. They told us to get there at 6, but it really started at 7. Would have been helpful to know that. It was actually really fun. So it was, you know, the models were dressed in clothes from the mall, like from Macy's and Nordstrom's, which are some, you know, big department stores, and Lilly Pulitzer. And they had some local designers that sell their designs at these stores also. And so, you know, it's just, yeah, there were models, but they're not like runway models.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got Ashley and then, oh my God, I'm trying to forget his name. Paul. I keep wanting to say Walker, but it's not Walker at all. Who I guess was
like a Potomac character?
Like a DC, Real Houses of DC character. So he doesn't even live here anymore. He is so funny and so fabulous. And it was just actually very entertaining and cute and fun. And so we're alongside the runway, and then there's like a big audience. But because it's a mall and we were on the first floor, there are people on the second floor all surrounded, like taking photos. There was like professional photographers there, and they kept like trying to take pictures of us as we're like chatting. It almost felt courtside.
Yeah, or like front row New York Fashion Week, but Potomac Area Mall instead.
So my favorite part of this is that Ashley's family was there. So I sat next to her brother and her brother's girlfriend, who is like one of the most lovely people I've ever met. Her mom, Sheila, was there. Her uncle, Lump, was there. We met her aunt. Like, it was really sweet. They're just very nice, normal people. And Charisse was there, and NECA was there.
Interesting. Now, I remember you saying when we were chatting about it, or you were like, I have been invited, that it's always interesting seeing these housewives in the real world and that they have real friends, and that you can kind of get a sense of like, oh, they do have a life outside of this, and this is actually how they kind of interact with the world, and like, what more did you learn about, I don't know, her as a character or as a real person, you think, from that whole experience?
I learned that the people on the show are her real friends, like the ones that she engages with. But she also has other real friends that know the folks on the show but aren't involved, right? So, yeah. And I think the most important was that she's got this one friend who I really like and have befriended, who's been her friend for 10 years. And I think it's important to be able to, like, have someone that you've known longer. And that she's known Charisse now probably the same amount of time. So, yeah, they're just, like, normal people. I don't know. It was, like, I can't say enough positive things about them. Like, it's, like, not dramatic. They're very lovely. Charisse was honestly so sweet. So sweet. Like, she told me she likes, said I look good in the dress I had. And we were talking about Cowboy Carter and how she hasn't listened to it yet, but her daughter keeps calling her and telling her to listen to it. Like, it was NECA's dog got neutered that day. We're talking about the cone. Like, they're just normal people.
Yeah, I find that, like, it's always a bit jarring when you kind of remember that these people, especially like multiple ones in the same car, sometimes have the same real life friends. And there are people that are actually kind of still a part of like the car, sort of, but they just haven't signed a contract and they're not on camera. And you see that sometimes when they'll get brought in as like a friend of a few years down the line. It's like, oh, so-and-so has known this person for 10 years and this person for 5. Like, oh yeah, your friendship circle isn't actually just however many of you are on the show. Those are just the ones that have a deal with Bravo to, like, appear. Sometimes there are actually, like, I don't know, it's bigger. There are other players involved. Or at least that's how it should be if they're casting properly and not just casting future co-workers, which I think happens in some cities.
I think the best part of all of this is that, I mean, I had always planned. I brought my friend, Jenny. And Jenny and I were like, okay, no matter what, we're going to Cheesecake Factory after this because we're at a mall.
I've never been to a Cheesecake. We don't have it up in Canada. Obviously, I'm very familiar with the lore of Cheesecake Factory. I know fully what it is. But, like, I have never been. And it is the kind of thing where I'm like, oh, I do want to go just once. But sometimes when you, like, commit to the bit of, like, an ironic thing and you go to a thing that's, like, famously bad, actually then you're stuck at, like, a bad place.
I do not think it's bad. The food is not bad.
And it's your dish when? Because I know they have basically like 1,000 dishes. What's your cuisine?
A salad. But they're
you can't freeze that.
Yeah, the salad is like, I mean, I barely ate half, right? But it's like a 1,800 calorie salad. Like, you know?
Oh, like drizzled in dressing.
There wasn't too much dressing this time, which is nice. I kind of was like, can you go a little light on the dressing? You know? It was good. Like, it's so good. It's so tasty. That's normally what I get, but I'm, like, not opposed to just getting an appetizer because apps are good. I like it. I mean, I went a decent amount in high school and then rediscovered it the last couple years and was like, oh, this actually slaps. That. It's not like a lot of other, you know,
chain places. Restaurants.
Yeah, I just, yeah. I like it. They have really good bread. That's like always, they have this like okay. brown bread that's, they always serve hot and is really good. But so that's what we wanted to do. And we were like with like one of her friends who was kind of like, man, Cheesecake Factory, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, you know, who thinks they're too good for Cheesecake Factory? And then Ashley was like, I want to go get a drink at Cheesecake Factory.
Okay. So you all went to Cheesecake Factory.
We all went to Cheesecake Factory. It was so busy. We like didn't, and she was escorted by security from the mall because she was like the person.
The VIP.
Yeah. So, and we ended up like taking spots at the bar and getting little tables, and all of us shut down Cheesecake Factory. We were literally there until the mall closed.
What if this is the start of your journey of like gradual integration into the Housewives cinematic universe? Like, this is your end.
No. I'm not interested.
At the very least.
Yeah.
I think you should be background at a party at some point.
That would be fun. I mean, I think Ashley's a really, like, after watching her and seeing her, like, a really, like, kind person. She treats everyone well around her. You know, wait staff, people she's never met. Like, she's kind to everyone. I think she gets messy for the show. I think that's part of her job. The only person I talked about the show to was NECA, because I just felt that she was very wronged this season and we didn't really get a chance to know her. And towards the end of the season, watching how she handled herself so well in so many situations, I was like, okay. I get down with NECA, you know?
Okay, so fill me in with that, because I was one of, I think, many people that gave up on this season. Yeah, I got halfway through and I was like, I can't keep going. I came back in right at the end because that finale was outrageous. But yeah, what was happening through the sort of latter part of the season with her?
Well, so there was the issue, and this is my interpretation only, right? I could be completely wrong. But it feels like when she was being cast, she said, they were like, who do you know on the cast? And she was like, oh, I've met Wendy before. And like, our husbands went to college at the same time. Like, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But then Wendy and her family got a hold of that and were like, you're trying to use me to get on the show. And they didn't like it. I think Wendy is someone who is actually extremely insecure and was threatened somehow by there being like another Nigerian woman, or I don't even know what her issue was, but she was nasty as hell to NECA. And then NECA said some things that weren't great to Wendy that I think had cultural implications between the two of them.
Yes, the shrine story.
But at some point during the season, NECA looked very defeated. She was like, Wendy, like, can we sit down and talk? And she was like, listen, I'm sorry for my part in this. Like, I want to move past this. And Wendy was so cold. And I think NECA was legit shocked at how cold Wendy was. And, you know, and then they did this photo shoot later. And everyone, got this like iconic, you know, black female character. And then they're like, NECA, we don't know you well enough to be in the magazine or something. And she didn't make a big deal out of it. No problem. Showed up to the party to celebrate everyone's photos. Like, I don't know. She seemed, and then the whole time she's going through issues with fertility. And I think there are like cultural reasons why maybe her husband doesn't want to use assisted reproductive technology. And then she tries to do IUI. And I think that is a very relatable thing because, you know, not everyone is like, oh, it's no big deal to do, you know, IVF for IUI, that I think in some cultures it's kind of looked down on. And I think I would love to see that explored a bit more. But
well, that was a storyline on Roni, wasn't it?
Right. Jessel. Jessel. But we didn't get to watch her go through it.
Yeah. But the interaction with her mom, it was, I found it really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. That was that I was scared to basically say that I used IVF.
Yep.
like because there's like a shame around it.
Yeah.
Which like I think is there's so much there more to unpack, but also not really maybe for like a I don't know, a reality show where we need people to be sort of screaming and fighting and all that stuff. Like it's I find it fascinating, but I don't know if it makes for like really engaging like story that gets ratings, which is ultimately what people want at
Yeah,
Bravo.
it's nice as like a side thing, right? But in general, the only person I have an issue with on the show is Wendy. And I've been very clear about why. I think, she doesn't know who she is. And so she keeps making up these things and, oh, no, this is my passion. No, that's my passion. No, I'm a talk show host. No, I'm this or that. But at the end of the day, she's unkind to people. And I don't think that's, I think the only insecure people are unkind. If you're secure with who you are, you don't feel threatened by anyone. And I think this was cemented for me after BravoCon, where she was on this panel for Potomac, and it was being moderated by Rachel Lindsay, who's like a big media personality, a lawyer, a like very well-established woman. And Rachel Lindsay went on Taria's podcast, What Else Is Going On, and said Wendy was not kind to her.
Oh, interesting.
And that,
I
yeah.
think. Oh, sorry, you go ahead.
No, and she was just expecting her to connect with Wendy the most, you know? But then NECA also was a lawyer. People keep forgetting that because she doesn't lead with it. But yeah.
I think it is, I think it's a situation where Wendy probably joined and was like, okay, my brand is I have a PhD. I'm going to be the only intelligent woman in the room because this is just a bunch of like unintelligent women fighting, and I'm going to like bring this aspect to it. And I think one of the things that threatens her is other women that are also quote unquote have intelligent jobs. Like it's people that are lawyers and academics are like two of the you are the most clever, like it's proof, right? You can't really argue with someone's PhD or the fact that someone like passed the bar and is a qualified lawyer. Like you can't. And so I think part of what she's threatened by is other people that are maybe able to call her out on stuff. Because if like if you're at an intellectual level, you're able to be like, no, that's bullshit. Whereas I think if she can hold herself above everyone and say she's better than them, they can't really get at her because she can always just be like, oh, well, I'm too clever. You don't understand me. Like you're below me. Like remember her first season she came on, she was like, it's Dr. Wendy, address me correctly. Like, can we get it?
I
Doctor of
actually liked
Education,
that.
right?
I was like, if this is you and you know who you are, then go for it. But then the issue was that wasn't who she was. She kept changing. And then I was like, no, be who you really are. And if who you really are is someone who doesn't know who they are, then that's quite relatable.
But you also have to think, and like I went through grad school, have a PhD, quit academia because I was like, there are no jobs, unsustainable. I made the pivot. And now I have a job that like is I'm able to keep doing stuff that I'm interested in. But I think with her, like no one that is fully comfortable in their position and their role, their place in like academia as a profession, leaves to do a reality show. No one that feels completely comfortable and secure and knows who they are would want to be doing something else like this that is such a major pivot. And so I think she came on being like, oh, she went through that whole process and then maybe is like, I'm not enjoying this. Academia is like awful in so many respects. I would understand people quit because I did it too. And I think what she did was came on like ready to basically use that as her way out and to figure out a rebrand, but didn't know what the next steps were. I think just wanted to like have a launch pad to something, which like if you have enough charisma and you're like funny, I think you ca that's all you need. Like a Candace could just like show up on the show and be like, I'm fucking funny and I'm interesting and I give good interviews, I make drama, like then figure out what the launch pad is going to be. But I think Wendy arrived and was like, okay, time for more stuff, and then hadn't really figured out what any of that was going to be, but doesn't have the like, to put it bluntly, charisma to just be able to carry her story based on herself and her own like humor or like how engaging, ooh, sorry, or how engaging she is. And that, I think, is how she's wound up being like, I'm doing candles. I'm doing a bar with a library. We also have a weed company. It's like, you do not know what the fuck you're doing. And like a full body makeover season two of a show, it's like, I am not knocking plastic surgery. I will do it. Lots of people do it. I think doing it as a second season is like such a classic reality TV phenomenon where someone goes on. They're like, oh, I didn't like it on camera. And then you come back completely brand new the second time around. And I think that reflects a broader, yeah, just like insecurity about where she is. And obviously, I don't know, we're watching a TV show. We can't make proper assessments on someone's like mental state, but it's like, I think it just shows someone that doesn't know who they are. And it's scary to be at that point when you're in your 40s.
Yeah. I mean, she had just had a baby. And so part of it, I think she was like, okay, this is my third. I'm done having children. I'm going to get that mommy makeover. This is the right time. I'm done breastfeeding or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I get that. But just to make it such a thing, like,
yeah,
this is going to be my thing that I talk about the most was a little bit, I mean, I think Ashley had a breast augmentation at some point. I don't remember. I don't know. It was kind of like a throwaway thing.
It was the start of this season, because I remember the first episode watching her interviews. I'm like, does her chest always look so like bouncy? And then within a minute, she was like, I got my boobs done. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that explains it. And then we just moved on.
Yeah. So I agree with you. One last thing on Potomac, because I don't feel like the reunion was good enough to recap, except for the fact that Andy opened it with calling the season frustrating, which was the first time I've ever heard him kind of start a reunion being like, basically, y'all sucked. What are we going to do to make this better? And kind of like, if you don't move past certain things, we're going to clean house, is sort of what I felt like he was trying to say. And they couldn't get past any of their shit. It's so annoying. It's only like Mia and Ashley, and well, Neca's new, but like only like Mia and Ashley get along with everyone.
Yeah.
And I feel like you need those people to move things forward in a group that's so fractured. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Karen gets along with most people except for Robin. Now Robin's gone. Okay, maybe Karen gets along with everyone now too. But yeah,
I feel like in real life, it's perfectly okay to be like, this is my hard no. I will not communicate with this person after they, I don't know, said my husband was like potentially assaulting someone or stuff like that. It's like the gravity of some of these things, I would get why you would never want to like talk to a person, be in a room with them, whatever. But ultimately, you are doing a TV show that does require you to film scenes. And we have the same thing happening with, like, that's the whole season of Vanderpump Rules right now, where it's like, in real life, you would just cut these people out, but the subtext is everyone being like, we have to keep our jobs. And our jobs rely on us, like, getting along, filming scenes, being able to, like, have story, because you can't have a whole season of multiple parallel storylines that never interact because certain people will not engage with each other. And it's like, yeah, it's just what you sign up for when you sign up to do a show like this is that you will get in awful fights with people, but you have to be willing to keep seeing those people. And like, you build a bridge, you have a fight. You build a bridge, you have a fight. Like, that's just the cycle. It's been happening for, like, however many years on all of these shows. And if you can't do that, then you can't make a show, really.
Yeah. Let's jump into Vanderpump, because that's...
Let's do it.
Let's do that. So, I mean, it feels as though the subtext, and tell me if I'm wrong, is Ariana does not want to be around her ex, and it's been a very short time since the betrayal, and she doesn't want to feel put in situations where she feels like emotionally unwell. And that makes sense. And then, and she also doesn't seem to be too, I mean, she goes to film and all that, but she doesn't seem to need the show as much, right? And then you've got everyone else, and their lifeline is the show. And specifically Sheena and Lala, who have children, and Lala has one on mm-hmm. the way. This is how they make money. This is how they provide for their kids. So for them, and they just bought houses. They now have multiple properties. These have mortgages. Like, it's not easy to keep paying something like that. And in order to keep living this lifestyle, they need the show to continue. And so I wonder if at some point they were like, listen, we know, Ariana, we know you're over it, but can you just, for us, because this is what we need to do for work, can you just give us something? I think, but rather than that, it just feels like Lala is digging in and attacking Ariana. And that is so bizarre to me.
All the podcasts she's been on in like the past week or so.
She's insane. I want it to be just hormones, right? But she, right? Because like I get that. Hormones can really mess with you, with your personality, with everything. But I don't know. It's really nasty, the things that she's saying. Really, really cut deep. And
I know.
She always assumes people will forgive her, but I don't know.
I mean, because when I've been seeing some of those, obviously we're kind of jumping out the timeline of like the show as is on the air, but like some of the things she's, the things she's saying and the places she's going to me is like, it's like that is complete like friendship ending stuff. I think she was even bringing up like her dad's death and being like, I was closer to mine. I'm like,
fuck you.
But not devil's advocate, but from a kind of TV producer perspective, I'm like, maybe they realize that this season was such a like stalemate in terms of not much really happening, or at least like this will be the last kind of season they'll have of that, I don't know, that level of relationship conflict, because when they pick up cameras again, the dust will have settled. I think it is laying the groundwork for just future episodes. I think they're thinking one step ahead and they're like, okay, we've wrapped. The story of that season was the sort of the aftermath of that breakup. That's not going to be happening next time. We're going to have to find something new. We have to set up new enemies, basically. And that is like... I think that's the, if you are working in reality TV and you're being cast with your quote unquote closest friends, I think it really does fuck with you and your perspective like on sort of relationships, because ultimately all your relationships with other cast members are things that you are managing to preserve, like you said, your income and your ability to work. And so I think for many of these people on our favorite Bravo shows, no relationship is above a paycheck.
Wow.
And so everything can be like, everyone can count on everyone if they're like desperate and they need story. Like, it's just because it's your livelihood. And like, sometimes I think people do make a decision and that's when they leave the shows, where they're like, actually, I do value relationships over the money that this show gets me. But the point you raise about Sheena and Nala having kids is a good interest. I hadn't thought of that. And that makes sense. Like, the stakes are even higher in terms of like securing your income, because you're like, well, and Lala especially is single mom, needs to like, if for whatever reason the show ends, she needs to like to build up the podcast audience. I think she's sort of eyeing up a transition onto the Valley, especially now that is going down well and it looks like it'll probably be sustained for a second season. I think that's probably in the back of a lot of their heads, where they can just see like when they're going to age out of this. And if they have kids, they can make it onto the Valley. But yeah, it's, I don't know. How are you feeling about this season in terms of like your enjoyment of it? Has it been fun to watch?
I have been enjoying it more than most. I think the only thing that's taking away from the enjoyment for me is all of the conversation outside of the show. It's a distraction. If they kept their damn mouths shut, if there was some sort of gag order and we actually got to watch it, I think it would be fascinating because they're breaking the fourth wall left and right. And they haven't done that much on this show. It's all of a sudden now a show about reality stars rather than the original premise. And we've been asking for this. We've been asking for them to show their real lives and the real arguments, and we are seeing it happening. And so I think the only thing that makes it frustrating is all of the conversation around it. And I don't think Ariana's being that crazy. And I don't think it's ruining the show to not have her and Tom in scenes together. I don't. I feel like there's enough happening. I'm interested in. I love the Katie and Schwartz dynamic now. I love seeing Katie and Ariana finally friends like they were always meant to be. You know, I'm interested in it. It's just it is less interesting because we already know what's going to happen because everyone keeps talking about it.
Also, I feel like I understand how you have to make a show, and for those shows you need scenes, and for the best scenes you need people all together. But I think this season actually the way it's been structured does actually reveal the kind of push the production of reality TV, which we all know is a thing now. But more so than previously, because if you had a breakup, even without infidelity, you would not want to be hanging around in like a bar with your recent ex of like a month, 2 months. I still get like a jump scare if I see photos of an ex from a year ago. I was like, no, I just... Like,
oh my god, mine's like 15 years. Like, I literally will be like, oh no. Do I? They're like walking on the opposite side of the street. You're like, I'm like, no. Right? I like all of a sudden become 24 again.
Yeah. I have once, to avoid someone, I have once like literally ducked in a packed bar and then like walked out almost on my knees to avoid them. That's like normal human behavior, is to not want to be around your ex.
Yeah, even if it didn't end badly, it's like, I don't want to have to talk about your life now and chit chat and be like, how are your kids?
Right?
It's awkward. And
this is obviously so much even more heightened than that because of what happened that we also all saw and became like a national news story. And so I think like them, that you're right, there would have been a way to, I think, do the season in a way that did not, I don't know, unnaturally push them all together to film. Because, like, you could still have got story out of this stuff without having to, like, basically restage conflict between the two parties of that breakup. You're forcing them into the same rooms. When they're communicating through lawyers, it's like, it's not... You're never going to get resolution. Well, like, they're not going to resolve to be friends. And so it's going to be frustrating to watch. So just don't do it.
They could have had that beach day not be about Tom and Ariana, right? They could have been like line in the sand and then switch the conversation. There's plenty of other things to discuss, right?
Yeah.
But they keep wanting to force it because I don't know who's telling them. I don't know if production's telling them. I don't know if they're telling each other. Like, they have to speak. And then they get what they want finally, which is Ariana blowing up. You know, she's extremely angry. I think the general public, women included, are very uncomfortable witnessing female rage.
Yeah.
And then she's going to get the reaction of like, she's so angry. And then Tom gets to have the narrative that this is what she always was like. Meanwhile, we've seen him screaming at people for years. And she blows up maybe once or twice, maybe three times in an entire decade. Like,
and
come on.
Behavior.
Come on. They're trying to push her to the edge, and it seems cruel for those who say that they're friends. And I think Lala is the biggest hypocrite with how she's been behaving. And I've always liked her as a character on the show. I appreciate kind of some of the perspective that she brings. I love that she's like the single mother and having this new kind of way of raising a family with her mom and her brother and Sheena and Brock all around. Like, that's cool. That's awesome. But when she was she also talked shit about Ariana's friends on a podcast, and they're not paid by this show. They're not riding her coattails for fame. They're not selling out, right? They do some interviews, sure, but they're not like, I mean, these are people who are already public. Like, her friend Brad is a public figure already. And so he knows how to go on a podcast and what to say and what not to say. But Lala was like, well, if Jess ever did that, and I'm like, that's your employee. I know you think this is your friend, but if the people that are closest to you are on the payroll, then it's different, right? It's like Sheena and her family, and a lot of them are on the payroll. It's just, it's different. So, like, what, you're going to go after Ariana for having actual friends that she doesn't pay? Sorry, I'm being really nasty. Oh. I should pull it back.
I mean, I think that honestly it's justified. I'll be very intrigued to see what happens at this reunion, because they keep every year they always bill a reunion as like, this crazy stuff happened, you won't believe what went down, and then sometimes it's like not really much went on.
I think it'll be big, because when they have these big blow-ups, it's terrifying. Like, they've had so many friendship ruining arguments on the show, and yet somehow they remain in each other's lives.
Because they're not, I think, until Ariana now, genuinely, I think she might be the first one to be able to successfully spin out a career that doesn't need reality TV. If she manages like this trajectory correctly, I think that's very possible for her. The rest of them, they're like, there's a reason that they didn't make it as actors to begin with, right? They wound up on the show all as aspiring actors, but they didn't have a break. So this is their only ticket. Like, they do not have.
But some of them wandered on the show, which isn't like, I feel like true. Katie just ended up on this show and ended up famous. And I don't think it was ever her goal to be famous. Sheena, I feel like her goal was to be famous regardless of what it was for.
From when she was like from
a child,
the moment
yeah.
she could talk. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a dream of hers. And I'm so glad she's living her dream. I don't think Schwartz ever really aspired for the same level of fame. I feel like Sheena and Tom Sandoval are the ones, and Lala are the ones that were like, I want people to know my name.
Yeah. And probably didn't envisage it being reality TV, but now they're like, well, this is how it's happening. And maybe there's a bit of resentment towards, or just resentment for not being able to have done it other ways. Like, having to go this route to like secure fame probably eats at them a bit, I think. And they spin it into like a lot of money, and it's very successful, and they've all bought like big ass houses.
Yeah, but then they like run it down to $2,000 in the bank account because they don't manage it well. That kills me. If I ever get a chance to like hang out with the cast, I would just be like, please.
Financial advice.
Financial advisors. Find a financial advisor outside of LA. Find one in like Iowa, Minnesota, you know, anywhere, and let them advise you on retirement, on investments. Like, please. Because it's hard. I mean, I think part of living in LA is keeping up appearances. And if everyone else has a big flashy house, and meanwhile, like a $3.5 million house is huge and a big deal, but not in LA, right? Like, that's what's so scary is that they are constantly seeing people having more, you know? And I think, I don't know. I worry about this cast, but I do have some questions for you. What do you think about Anne, Tom's assistant, and the role that she is playing on this season?
I saw someone on Twitter, she had posted a clip of her in an episode of The Office.
No, she's an aspiring actor and mainly comedian.
Okay, so I did not clock that. And what was interesting is like her on screen like does not give comedian to me. Like, I know, like, I am one, I know a lot of them, they have a particular energy, and she does not seem to have that. Initially I thought she was like a normal person. I find the whole thing weird, if I'm honest. I think the way Tom Sandoval treats employees is like an assistant. The errands and the things she's having to do for him and clean up after him is like outrageous for a 41-year-old. Like I last week I got a cleaner for my apartment for the first time ever in my adult life. And I was like, and it was life-changing, incredible. Cannot believe I'm in a position where I can like do this. This is great. But I was so nervous about like it being messy before they came.
Oh,
And
that's always
I
a
was like,
thing.
oh yeah, like tidying stuff up. It's like great, like that they can like vacuum and like wipe mirrors and stuff, but like I don't want it to appear like I'm living in squalor. Like I'm gonna get like the worst mess out the way. And then it's just like someone helping me like keep all the surfaces clean. How can you be a 42-year-old just leaving your like dirty underwear around for someone to I would be mortified if that was me. Mortified. But I'm not like a grade A narcissist on reality TV. So I think that's probably the answer to it. Yeah, I like using her as like a pawn, like a breakup pawn is like a weird, like it's just strange. Just find a different assistant, people. Like she can't be that amazing that she's worth like all of, it's just
I do think
confused
there
me.
may be a level of trust with her, though, because she's been with them for like 4 years at this point with this couple, and in their
She's
home
seen
every
everything.
day, she's seen everything and she doesn't leak it, right? Like
Yeah.
she's been loyal. And, and yeah, she wants to be famous on her own. And, she's really involved in Upright Citizens Brigade, like that. So she's more
She's a UCB-er.
yeah,
Interesting.
she's an
I didn't.
improv girl.
Do you, and Ariana did that. Like, that
Yes.
was.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
that was a connection that they had. Right. And so I don't know. I just, the whole thing is just interesting to watch. What I also find so fascinating, I feel like there's like some similarities between Tom Sandoval's personality and Lindsay Hubbard's, in
Yes.
that you could literally point out a fact and they will say, "That's not true. I never did that." And with Tom, when they're say he's like, "I never have her clean up my dirty clothes," and then you literally witness her doing that.
Footage. Yeah.
Footage of it, and he says Ariana never cleans the litter box, and then there's
Footage.
footage. It's like you have created a narrative, and then if you ever watch that interview he did with Nick Vial, it was the most
I was
interesting
just
thing.
about to say that, yeah. Should we explain for people that didn't?
Yeah, go ahead.
So Nick Vial, former Bachelor, is now kind of like has a podcast that is, I think, very much part of like the LA reality TV like conveyor belt. Like the reality
Zeitgeist.
stars go on his podcast, like, and it does pretty well. He did one with Schwartz and Sandoval where Tom Sandoval showed up, I think, maybe an hour or something late, like showed up like in like tracksuit looking hungover and then was like, sorry, I was at a thing.
We but then tried to make it seem as though Nick was late to when Nick
Yes.
recorded with him.
Yeah. So instead of just like rolling with it, Nick pushed back and was like, okay, so why were you late? And then it changed from I was hanging with a friend to actually you were late when we did our something else, like another podcast, and then the sort of podcast audio tech person just got out the text
Oh no,
exchange
that was
to
his
show
fiance. When he was like, I was
Nick's
he told
fiance.
me, yeah, he told me he was leaving Whole Foods at like 6:52 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so if you guys started recording at 5, if he got there at 5:30 and he's leaving Whole Foods at 6:52, leaving for Whole Foods, then that was when you
You
guys
recorded the
recorded.
part. Yeah.
It
And even
wasn't
with
at
the like
8:30 p.m.,
proof.
right? She's like, he went to Whole Foods and he came home. And so
And
there's
then.
proof, and he still is like, no, you relate to mine. You didn't t like, and there's proof. And Lindsay Hubbard is the same way. She's claiming that she didn't, do certain things or didn't see certain things. And then we watch her because her reality is so different from what's
Yeah.
happening. And I feel like that for Tom Sandoval. What he thinks is going on is not actually what's going on. And that's the most frustrating and kind of scary thing to witness. We're all watching him live his life and he's living a different life.
Okay, so I have heard like a bunch of different podcast people. I think Joel Kim Booster once said something that was like, they're the recipe for a perfect housewife. One of the main ingredients is delusion. And I think there's like benevolent delusion, and then there's like narcissist bad delusion. Like you always need a bit of like even Ashley Darby, like there are elements of delusion with the whole story with like Michael and the hooking up with men and like and pretending things different happen. Like you need, I think, characters that kind of refuse to acknowledge certain things, or just it makes for a great storyline. It makes for an engaging character, and sometimes it's funny to watch, and it makes them kind of like Mia. Mia's commitment to lying doesn't actually seem that offensive. It kind of makes her more endearing, and I enjoy her as a character for that. Whereas the flip side of that is someone like a Tom Sandoval that weaponizes that to like make other people feel bad, or to sort of gaslight is so overused. I hate that it is, but like in this context, it is perfectly applicable to this person. And also, yeah, maybe I guess this is a good point to pivot into Lindsay in the Summer House for it all, which is, oof, I'm all in on this season. I am.
I cannot believe this is actually the only thing that has shocked me thus far, besides Cocaine Carl, is asking Kyle to be a flower boy when he officiated, when Carl officiated his wedding.
I completely understand like how that is working, but when I'm watching it, I'm just thinking like this is heterosexual nonsense, and I love it. Where I'm like, this is never a conversation that I really have to like think about. And the fact that everyone know like there is a code and like implications of like what should and shouldn't be done and what is or isn't offensive, and I'm watching it and I had to wait for the someone to explain why it was bad, and I'm like, okay, I completely get it now, but this is a whole world that is like outside of mine, basically.
Who explained it so you understood?
Paige. The page was good. I'm like, oh, okay, like this is a fuck you, as opposed to just like, yeah, I just didn't initially understand a lot of it because I have not been involved in many weddings. Yeah, I feel like I don't know if we've had a season where of any of these shows really where we know what we're building to and we're starting the whole season looking for signs building to a big terrible dramatic event. Sometimes they do it with like fights, like oh the season will end with like a huge brawl, but like this is kind of the full dissolution of a relationship, and then you step back at the very beginning of the season and we're watching it all unfold.
But most of the time, like for example, Kyle and Mauricio, we knew that they separated, yet there were a couple signs throughout Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, but it was not a constant. It was definitely not episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Like this is every episode we're seeing very clear reasons why they were not a good match for each other. I just can't get over the FU that was. And I get that Kyle yelled at Lindsay and called her a bitch, and they've had a whole lot of kind of back and forth sort of situations. But at the same time, Kyle was one of the people that was there for Carl when he hit his rock bottom. He was, I
Yeah.
remember that story of Carl being inside his apartment, not opening the door, and Kyle waiting at the door and talking him through the door and said, "I love you. This isn't about the show. Fuck the show. Fuck Lover Boy. I love you. I'm worried about you." And that was, I think, the last day that Carl used.
And then went to rehab treatment
I
right
don't
after.
know that he actually did treatment. I
Just
think
like
he might
quit.
have, I don't know his story with that.
Yeah.
I think he started seeing professionals. And I think he started going to NA or AA, and I know he has a sponsor.
With the like the flower boy situation, when I was watching that, and then when you're watching Carl explain, like the reason that I chose to do this is Lindsay said so. I'm watching that and I'm just waiting for like we will get to the reunion and that will be a thing that we're then suddenly we're going to be seeing the other side of like what actually went down. And like that being kind of, I think, one of many symptoms of a very dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah. Well, and just the fact that he didn't want to push back. Like Lindsay, he said, didn't even say it. He just knew. And then when she suggested it, do you watch the after show? They have an after show.
I see the clip sometimes, but I don't really know where to find it or like how to watch it.
Oh, it's on Peacock. You have Canada. Hey You. Does Hey You have the after shows?
No. I think sometimes they show up on YouTube, but we don't have after show.
So there's only two thus far from Summer House. I think they saw how good the ratings were and were like, we need to bring everyone in to do an after show. And even Gabby is like, oh, this is not great. And Lindsay's trying to explain it, thinks it's funny, thinks it's cute. And it's like, this is not funny. It's not cute. Apparently, there's a TikTok trend of having grown men be flower boys. Fine. Okay, let's laugh. Ha ha. But it seems... you know, Kyle, and I get it, Kyle has like done a lot of stuff that pissed a lot of people off. He threw Carl under the bus talking about how he was a bad employee. He showed up coked up at work, all that stuff. They have gotten past that. And he has been there for Carl. And just the idea that you would not want your love of your life to have his best friend there with him, like one of his closest friends. Because he's got a lot of good friends outside the show, right? But to have that, like, that's such a nasty thing, you know? We all know wives who don't like their husband's best friend. But they always let them... They're still involved.
Also, I think you don't even need to have someone be the, like, officiant. If they're just being a part of, like, the groom's party.
Yeah.
They're just standing up there. It doesn't mean they're in charge.
The other thing is West, and this was the first episode that I kind of started questioning West, because he seems very eager to have sex with Sierra and not necessarily to date Sierra. This is because it's like...
So I find them both quite appealing as characters. I don't know if they're bringing something out of each other. And obviously, this guy is like new this year. I think he's a great addition to the cast.
Yes.
And I feel like I just find them both, quite endearing. And I feel like they're being very sort of transparent about, I don't know, like what's going on. And like, I find it refreshing when they're like, oh, well, I mean, I would have liked to have sex by now. But they're also, they're doing it in front of each other. That's the thing where I think like, it feels like they feel like equals in that situation, where I don't feel like one of them is, I don't know, bringing up the fact they haven't had sex to like shame. There was the bar situation where they were on a rooftop with Danielle and the other new guy. Mm-hmm. And that conversation came up because one of the others brought it up, but it didn't feel like one of the two was trying to, I don't know, embarrass the other one in front of other people. Like it kind of, to me anyway, seemed like, oh, you all sort of seem on a level about it. And you're kind of, I don't know, you're refreshing in the degree of like openness that you're talking about all of this. I would be intrigued to see how that like evolves. Like if he keeps doubling down and she's like, actually, I don't want you. And he's like, no, I do. Then that's like, you're being pushy. This is weird.
Yeah.
But now I didn't see major red flags with it.
It was only in the after show, I realized.
Oh, after show.
Yeah,
okay.
And it was more because him and Jesse are together in the chairs at the after show. And he, I don't know if it was Jesse that said it or him, but it was something like, well, if I'm not going to be with Sierra, then like I could just... Like, he basically said, I didn't expect to be celibate all summer. And it's like, well, if your goal is to have sex, then don't be with Sierra. Like you... If your goal is to be with Sierra, then eventually you will have sex with her. But if your focus is on the sex, then you're like, that's not, I don't know. It was weird. It was like your goal is to be having sex this summer, not to be with someone that you really like, which I know is a thing for most people, but you found someone you're really into. Isn't this more exciting? I think basically, I think men, straight men, this day and age don't have to like work for much, and they have this like maybe incorrect idea about sexual relations because of Pornhub, because like there's nothing left up to the imagination anymore. And it's not like you go through high school and middle school where you're like looking at magazines. You're able to go online and see all sorts of weird, inappropriate, you know, balance. Like it bothers me. And I think it makes men set up for failure in their own sexual relationships in real life. And I feel like that's a lot with younger men where they just have these ideas about the way sex is supposed to be because they watch porn. And it's not like sex with an actual woman that you care about, you know, it's a conversation. It's like an exchange. It's like intimacy. It's for most people and most women, especially, sex is not just sex. They expect some sort, even if it's casual, some sort of rapport afterwards.
So I think I would push back on that slightly, but I would agree with parts of it. I think, I don't think we can necessarily ascribe, we're diverting off how, like reality TV, but whatever, I enjoy these conversations. I don't think we can ascribe people's attitudes towards dating and relationships and like the, for lack of a better word, like courtship stages of that. I think, I think we can ascribe the problems with that to porn. I think when it comes to people actually having sex and the types of sex they're having and what they expect women to do, I think absolutely you have porn setting up people's expectations of like what is or is not pleasurable or common or normal or like niche extreme kink versus like normal average person sex. I think if we're going to try and find sort of a broad, like, blame for men's attitudes towards sex as part of dating, I think as a whole, you have, like, a bigger target with that. I think it's a combination of, like, of TV, movies, social media. Like, I think it's bigger things that aren't necessarily just porn, but, like, implying that, like, what is or is not a standard timeline for dating someone that's like, and also I think especially reality TV, and this is like what they're getting into and what they are a part of, as like if you're looking at certain types of shows that are really oriented towards like people hooking up and finding each other and young people having hot horny summer, Love Island I as case in point, it's the speed of all of that, it's like a hyper speed. And I think, I genuinely think a lot of what young people now learn about straight dating and relationships is through things like Love Island and other types of reality shows. That's how you see, that's the only way I think really you see like real time young people relationships be forming and happening. But it's not the real world. And those timelines are like, oh, you meet, you say you're in love within like 2 weeks and you're like fucking right away like rabbits. Like, or Bachelor in Paradise or something like that, where it's like you're just sort of rotating through people. Even the idea of The Bachelor, which like, we know he watches because they made a joke about him saying like that he watched it.
Oh, yeah, in Monday, yeah.
Yeah, that normalizes the idea of you're hooking up with or dating like 30 people at a time and then whittling that list down. And like that is not a sustainable thing, but I genuinely do believe that shows like that really do have an effect on how people perceive dating.
You're right.
And then the sex part is like, I think, yeah, the effects of porn is like violence towards women, like in the context of the bedroom and like expectations of certain stuff with that. But I think things like The Bachelor are like
worse for the court. You're totally right. It's just
more
like,
insidious, I think.
Why would you assume? I would assume that a relationship on TV like this one would move slower than for me. Like if I was being filmed, I would be much more cautious, and I'm already kind of cautious, right? But because not only is this a potential relationship, this is a potential relationship that everyone else is going to be commenting on, and that's what she went through with Austin, where everyone else had an opinion about it. And she's like, well, I don't want to mess up. So I want to take this a little slower and really get to know him as a person so that I can trust how he will be, even if this ends.
I think in this case, you have the difference between someone that is a reality TV novice and someone that's done it before.
You're totally right.
Because if you had two people with it, and I think we've seen it with like Summer House like characters before. Like last year, there was, I forget a lot of their names. The blonde girl that appeared out, that like arrived and then was like suddenly in love with the tall blonde guy with the gym. I'm so bad with
Oh, that
names.
Jessica was her name. She was looked like Lindsay Hubbard, but different.
Yeah. And then within like a week, they were like, I'm obsessed with you. You're my boyfriend. This is great. Woo. And like that was both of them. It just kind of, and it's, you see the same things like Winter House. People will meet. And then within like a few days, they're like, yes, this is a thing now. And like, I think when you have someone that's maybe done that once or twice before and realized maybe that's not healthy for me, or I didn't really enjoy the scrutiny, or like that didn't lead anywhere substantial, I think she probably has a different perspective on like dating with cameras around. Whereas I think he's like, fuck it, let's like, we're making a TV show. I'm having like a fun, horny summer. Also, you're cute. I'd like to date. And I think that's
Yeah.
sort of why
Yeah.
we have loggerheads.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Anything else on Summer House before we head to the valley?
Very briefly, you probably already covered it because it was
Yeah.
previous weeks, but the accusations of Carl not being sober on
Yeah.
camera. Well, some of them happening on camera, but B, we need to put GoPros in these fucking Ubers. Like, I do not want to see any more fights that happen without a camera where we're having to recap it based on someone's iPhone notes. No, cameras everywhere. We can put cameras in a fucking Sprinter van for the housewives, and we can't just like put some in an Uber when they're in the Hamptons. Like, what is going on?
Have a car
That's
service ready for them. Have five car services ready for them just in case they want to leave at different times.
You're making a TV show. It's and they fight in Ubers, and we've like established that they like to fight in Ubers. So like, put the cameras in the Ubers. I remember there was one, I don't know which housewives it was, but there was one where people started fighting in the back of the car, and one of them, maybe Ashley Darby, just got out an iPhone and started like sneakily filming. And I was like, that's what we need. We need people who are committed to like getting shit on camera and will whip out their own iPhones if we don't have a production team. But generally speaking, production teams step it up. And I cannot believe the sobriety. Like, I on the moment that happened, I was like, oh, the breakup actually makes sense. Whereas prior to the season airing, she, I think because she works in PR, had done a very good PR job of spinning it as like he was heartless, did this on camera, blah, blah, blah. And you're
But
like, oh, wait.
also, if your engagement was on camera, why is your breakup not allowed to be on camera? Why is that too real? And I get like not wanting that, but I don't believe that he intended to end everything with her at the time that they ended it. I think he pushed back. And she was like, maybe we don't need to get married at this time. Like, let's delay. Let's work on our issues. And she just was like, no, you don't want to get married. Then we're done. That's how I believe it went down. And hold me to it because I've said that from the very beginning when he said only once, I never intended that to be a breakup. But that's what happens when you push back against someone who has issues with narcissism, any pushback against their narrative leads to a rage. And I think we've all been in those situations with people that you just kind of always let them get away with certain things. And then when you finally push back, just the slightest, in a very calm manner, they lose it. And that's what I guess, and I bet she was like calm during it, or she looked calm, but she was like, that's it. This is the way we're doing it, or we're not doing it at all.
I will say the little preview that we got, so perfectly edited, where like the breakup happens and then she goes into a separate room and then he's talking to the producer and he's like, she's probably going to say she's being blindsided, and it cuts to her on a phone saying, I was completely blindsided. I'm like, that is
Chef's
a
kiss.
per
Yeah.
perfect edit, but also like it, you can tell, I don't know, like he knows her well enough to know exactly how that will work. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is someone that also knows they should be breaking up because they know exactly how this whole thing is gonna like pan out based on the sort of problems in their relationship and her. I'm reticent to ascribe, like, I don't know, extreme mental health stuff to people, like, I don't know, saying someone's a narcissist or a bad person. But I think just through someone's pattern of behavior on a TV show, you can kind of see maybe how they would navigate through something like this. I'm just glad that we do actually have a season aside from the breakup ending, because I thought we were going to have like 12 episodes of nothing and then finally watching the breakup.
Oh no, it's and good. So it's really good.
It's good. It's, you know, it's what great. Else is good? The Valley.
I love The Valley. Now, I wasn't sure about it. I really like some of the people, and I knew about some of the people beforehand. I've always liked Janet. I found out about her through Sheena. I've kind of followed her life story a little bit by following her on social media, and I find her to be a really intriguing and very watchable character, person. But as my friend Elise Rosen said, Alex Baskin doesn't produce bad shit. She didn't say it word for word, but she's like, he doesn't. Like, if he's behind it, it'll be good.
So what else has he worked on?
Vanderpump Rules and Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
So I, when it was announced, I was worried. And it looked, I was like, this is, I feel like we're having sort of the Jackson Brittany rehabilitation tour shoved down our throats. Also, like, how much are we going to get from like people playing at adulting? I thought that was, they build it at the angle being like, oh, adulting. And I'm like, you're 42, you're already adults. But what I love about it is the fact that we are not pretending this is a separate universe from Vanderpump.
Mm-hmm.
We're very much talking about like the shows where we're doing, like, I think every good reality show in 2024 has a degree of fourth wall break. You kind of have to. It's like, what it's, that's where the genre is moving. You all got to do it. Them talking about the firing of Kristen and of Jax. I'm like, this is how you get a story, because we're talking about the fact that this show is a spin-off from another one. We're acknowledging the fact that like she got fired because she did something racist and she lost all her money and she lost her home. Because she didn't
lose her home from that.
So how did that pan out then? Because like,
she
for me,
bought a
when
house,
I was watching it,
and yes, that guy that she was dating, she claims convinced her to sell it. Because he's like a real estate agent or something like that. I just think she doesn't, because it was not a huge house. It was like a very reasonable investment for a single woman of her age. Like, I thought it was a great space. So I don't think she, what I think was hard was sort of the canceling, where she no longer was on a show. She couldn't have a podcast. She kind of couldn't do anything. And I do believe that she reached out to Faith and apologized before others did.
I am very much like, I don't buy when she says he convinced me to sell it. I'm thinking about,
same,
like,
I don't buy any of the, yeah, I don't buy any of the things
she
says about any relationship, because they all have the same pattern. You look at Carter, it was the same way. Like, Katie and Stassi had to have a boundary with her because of her back and forth and up and down with Carter. Then the same thing happened with Janet at having to have a boundary because the up and down with Alex. Like, at some point, Luke will get to the up and down part. She's never been able to just like have a relationship, and then when it gets bumpy and it doesn't work, it ends, and then you move on. It's never like that. It's this like crazy back and forth, and, you know, breaking up and getting back together, and like, you know, crazy up and down ride, and everyone else is brought along with it.
Yeah.
Now,
I just think there's going from owning a house to being back in a vertical blinds apartment situation.
Yes.
And like, someone was forced into this. Like, no one chooses that. And that, I think, is what makes this so compelling, because she has nothing to lose at this point. She has like completely hit rock bottom. And so, because she was kind of brought on at that point where she's basically at the bottom of her like career, like she had no work going, she was like fully cancelled. It means that she she's not doing this show to preserve anything. She's seeing it as her way out of where she was. So it's her way out of being at her like total rock bottom, unemployed. She just has to give them stuff for TV. Whereas the other people that have been brought in that are maybe first timers on reality television have businesses, have careers, are successful, are rich. And you can see, like, with the racism fight, that fight was about them potentially losing money for that. Because what are they realtors together? I think that's what their
job
is. Yeah,
but also, I mean, to call
he's an asshole
a woman who is a first generation Iranian American, Mexican American, raised in the Baha'i faith, a racist, and then to a political party. The thing that's so unique, and I figured this out very quickly when she was saying my father left Iran because of religious persecution, I was like, yeah. Okay, well, she's either Jewish or Baha'i. And she's Baha'i. And part of that, and I only know that because there's a guy who ran for local office who was Baha'i, and he had to basically like renounce his faith to run for office because part of the faith is not believing that like politics can lead to the outcomes that you want. And so you don't have any political affiliations. It's a huge part of the faith. You follow the laws of the country that you live in and you're a good citizen, but you don't get involved in political parties.
Politics. Yeah.
I think you vote and stuff, but like to say, oh, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican is kind of a no-no. And I don't know if she currently practices, but it is a very, like, to, it's not just saying, oh, you're Republican. It's saying you chose a political party, which is something that's, yeah, that's what I was concerned. And I don't know if she keeps the Baha'i faith anymore, but that was like immediately what I clocked. Mm. And then the racism where she is... You know, I don't, it's like hard to say like who's white, who's not white, because everyone, but she's not a Western European white person. And to be called that is really shitty. And what I love is we're finally actually talking about real politics, not the racism and the Republican, but when they talked about the Don't Say Gay bill, and that's where this all came from. I was like, okay, I know these people at some point on all these shows discuss the shit because it ends up, it's in our news, it's in like, it's in our general zeitgeist. Are they just never, are they acting like there's nothing happening? And to hear that they had a conversation about that made me so happy. I was like, oh, they're discussing real things.
I think it's not improbable that she, if she does not formally identify as Republican, clearly has Republican values. Especially if you're like the don't, I fully believe she said the stuff about the Don't Say Gay bill.
Yeah, I believe that.
And I think probably what some people said was like had a conversation about it and then probably didn't say the word she's a racist, but just Kristen heard like them talking about like, oh, this is how this person
feels. Maybe she's Republican because that bill was introduced by a Republican and passed by a Republican legislature in Florida.
And then,
like, and then eventually the Republican and racist thing because there are elements of certain people within the Republican Party. But it's such a generalization and it's so dumb. And I have a feeling that it all got messed up with Zach. That's my theory, that he's the one, because he's messy as hell, that like took it from Don't Say Gay and this could be a teachable moment to Republican and racist. Like, I think he's the one that did it and he said it to Kristen, and Kristen is not lying that that's what she heard. And she's saying, I heard it from Zach. And Jasmine's like, well, that's not what I said. And Janet's like, well, that's not what I said. I think it's Zach. I think he's the problem.
Oh yeah. He has like, evil gay energy.
Evil.
It's bad.
Yeah.
And like, we finally got like a main gay on one of these like younger gen Bravo shows. Fantastic. Great that we cast like one that seems like a demon because there is a darkness in his eyes. I find his like hair unit very intriguing. It's already doing the rounds on Twitter. People are trying to investigate what's happening with the hairline. Like if it's real or if it's just like a hair piece or if it's pushed a certain way. The whole like dinner party fight had a few like real standout moments for me. First one, when that guy put his hand in his wife's face.
I know.
I when I saw that, this is dark, but I had flashes to Taylor and Russell
Oh.
in the way that they acted with each other in public. I'm not insinuating anything specific. If anyone legal is listening, I'm
And a
not
little
that,
bit
but like,
about Tom Girardi and Erica
yeah,
Jane. He did that once to her.
just that dynamic of like, if you will do that, put your hand up in front of your wife's face and tell her to shut up in front of a room full of people. I'm like, okay, well, people generally tend to behave better in front of others. So, like, what's it like in private? And that counseling session they had was fucking dark. It was so, I mean, we know they're divorced now, but like, that was.
When he's like, "Well, what if I'm good for 2 months?" I was like,
Yeah, and
"Okay,
she was.
there's the problem. That's why it's not working." She knew at that moment he's only trying to be quote unquote good so he can get what he wants, not
Yeah.
actually to be a supportive partner. We all know he's a piece of shit, but the thing is, he seems to know it too. Like in the after show, he like was joking that he's a deadbeat dad.
Yeah, I mean, perfect casting. Like, no wonder this person is friends with Jax Taylor. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm glad these people are on our screens. I'm glad that we're going into this knowing there's going to be two separations happening. That was enough to drive it aside from the whole Kristen storyline. So I think we're in for like a lot of good stuff. The way the episode ended that like showed that ultimately she has not changed and has not grown, which I thought was so telling, was the classic talking about being called a racist. And they were like, and that is the worst word anyone could ever put on anyone. And I'm like, have you heard of slurs? Like, this is, but it is classic of a woman in, or a person in her position, a white person, to basically imply that being called a racist is worse
Than
than
being,
enduring racism.
yes.
And that, despite her like sensitivity training that she apparently did and all of that, clearly the message had not landed, and we're in 2024 and she ultimately is still there. And granted, we don't need growth from people on reality TV, because if they all grow and mature and go to the right amount of therapy, we do not have a TV show. So I am glad that like there are some parts of this and some characters that are still stuck, because it means they'll behave in predictable ways that will give us good television. But I think it actually is like a, we're getting a teachable moment. The teachable moment is how to not navigate this as a white person, because it's,
Although
yeah.
I don't even know that she's a white person. I mean, this
Kristen?
like she's Lebanese.
Oh, I didn't know that. White passing.
Yeah, but at the same time, what she did was just ignorant. But I could see how what happened with her and Stassi, where they weren't thinking about race, they were thinking faith. We think she committed a crime, and we are going to call and report that we thought she committed a crime, and. You know, and not thinking about the implications of calling the police. I think as a way to get back at her for what she did to Brittany, that's what they were thinking, and they were not thinking of it through a racial lens. Does that mean that it is not a racist action? No, it just means I don't think that the intention, they weren't thinking of the implication.
I think one thing where I would push back on what you said slightly, and that I think we actually see in the show right now, is the sort of the intent element of racism. And I think there is the misconception that racism is a conscious like intent that you have ill will and that it's a thing that you choose to do, when we know that like you can do and say racist things despite being one of the people that's like, quote, I don't have a racist bone in my body. Like, you can still do it, and actually
You're
intent
right.
is like taken out of it. And what I think a lot of white people, or white passing people, or people that don't have, people that have better interactions with law enforcement and all other kinds of
Yes.
authorities tend to internalize, is we think that because racism is always conscious and because it's all about intent, if someone says that we are being racist, they are saying we have bad intentions and we are a bad person. When actually, that's not necessarily what people are saying, because it is not just about intent. You can be doing racist things, and it's not about you being like, you having certain beliefs. Obviously, lots of terrible people do. But I think we see this play out with the way Kristen is responding to it, where that element of this conversation, which I think is like a pretty fundamental part of it, clearly still has not landed with her. because her emotional response to discussions of the racist things that happen and that she did a thing and that action was racist. She might not be hold racist beliefs, but that's what happened. She reacts in such a visceral emotional way that says, like, this is the worst thing that someone can be called, because she hears it as racism is people's bad intentions. Racism is evil people. Racism is, like, it's a personality trait. It's someone that's choosing to be, like, evil and bigoted, when we know that it's different from that. And what I really think was fascinating was, granted, this was all being, like, edited, so we don't really know how it played out, but when this dinner party fight started, did you clock who was one of the people that was completely silent the whole time? The black
Jasmine.
person at the table. And seeing other people, seeing white people bringing up racism as a gotcha for each other, when she's like, I'm the black person sitting at this table, and you are weaponizing stuff that I actually experience to play gotcha with each other. In my head, I was watching that, and I'm like, okay, I see what's happening here. And I was trying to picture, because I've definitely been in some situations before that are obviously not completely comparable, but people having fights about, like, homophobia among each other. When, like, if I'm there, like, I've had people talking about, like, oh, hate crimes, or like, or what is or isn't dangerous, or who isn't or isn't bigoted. And then I'm like sitting right here, and I'm like, I'm the only person in this room that actually lives with this or has experienced it. And it's kind of a talking point for the rest of you. And that was really fascinating for me to watch, because it's, as well as on the one hand, you have Kristen and what she has or has not learned about race and racism and herself, and then other people that I think, because of the way these shows were, are so driven to, like, find a conflict point or a one-up on each other, that they're using that to drive story. Actually, did, like, it says a lot about the rest, not the rest of them, but the ones that are using this. Like, it says as much about you, I think, if you're that guy whose name I can't remember, but who brings it up as a gotcha, than it does about Kristen, that, like, did the thing a few years ago, or the other people that maybe brought this up in, like, a conversation as a gossip point. Like, none of you are looking very good right now. Because also, like, I think we even said it was briefly touched upon when she brought it up at the drinks party at the house, where, sorry, what was the name of the black woman? I don't know
Jasmine.
any, Jasmine. So I don't know any of the names aside from Kristen and Jax. I'm still not, and Brittany, obviously, I'm not there with the names yet. But there was a brief point where Kristen said that, and then Jasmine turned to her and was like, you are not gonna bring this up or, like, weaponize this with me right here. And I felt like we brushed past that point, and I was like, kind of, obviously, this, we're not watching, like, an educational series, so we can't be expecting that. But I was like, oh,
That
that
was.
is a really interesting element of all of this, because, yeah, we, like,
No, you're totally right. I was incorrect in how I framed it. I think the way that they're using the term is the way I meant it, which was like intentionally
yeah.
harming. And that is what was pushed, I think, as a narrative. And, you know, there's a whole like intent versus impact. The impact was what to focus on. But I think what they were coming for and what they won't, people, some people won't let go of is if you're called racist, that you have like bad intentions. And
Yeah.
that means, in my view, that you're basically saying, oh, you can't learn because this is inherently in you. And you can't improve your behavior because you're bad. That's the problem, is the way that I think me as a white person, white presenting person, uses the term racism, I use it as like a, you mean it, you know, rather than, and it's the truth is it's not, and you're right. This is very interesting to talk about all this. And one last thing I'll touch on, because we definitely have gone over time, is the don't say gay bill. And you mentioned that maybe she might have Republican leanings. The way that they marketed this bill was to get at parents of young children and convince them that sex was being taught and discussed at a very young age at school, and that this bill is trying to protect children from discussions of sex at an early age. And that's what I think is when Janet said, oh, I think she got like caught in an algorithm where she's being fed this. And I think then she was like, oh my gosh, I don't want my daughter, like people at school to be talking to her about sex. That's not appropriate. You know, meanwhile, she has gay friends that come and are around her daughter. There's no issue. If they had a partner, I'm sure she would say, oh, yeah, this is like, you know, two men, two women, whatever, you know. But it's the sex element. And that's how they got so many people to believe that it wasn't a discriminatory bill, because it was all about, and that's not true, right?
You frame it as like a parent's rights thing.
That's how everything is being framed these days. The vaccine mandates, oh, it's parents' rights to choose whether or not your kid is vaccinated for measles. Meanwhile, you travel overseas, they get measles, they go to school. Now you've got a ton of people, they've got an outbreak, and now in 17 states. So, not that I'm counting. you know, so I think that it didn't, people who hear these things and like believe them because they sound good and they seem to make sense, they're not necessarily of any political persuasion.
Yeah.
So.
That's a good point. I mean, I think it's also what the Republicans that drive this stuff kind of bank on.
Yeah.
Is being able to, for lack of a better word, just hoodwink people into thinking that something is neutral and that actually everyone should be on board with, like, but like we shouldn't be like giving porn to 3-year-olds. You're like, yeah, we shouldn't.
But
that's bad.
They take a thing that's not happening and then they create a law being like, well, we need to prevent this. It's like, this ain't happening.
To target the stuff they actually do want to target. Yes.
And they like fit that in. Anyways, Dan, thank you so much for being on. I kept you way longer than I said I would. I love chatting with you. Tell everyone where they can find you, anything you want to plug on your comedy, anything you want to plug on your work.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Dan James Comedy. If you're in Toronto, we host monthly Bravo watch parties called Bravo Cinema Club. Next week we are watching Scary Island at a bar in Toronto, so you can find all the information on my socials, and it'll be lovely to meet some of you if you have Canadian listeners.
I do, actually.
Then come, please do. Yeah. Please.
I have Canadian and UK listeners.
Oh, amazing.
And if you're in a different country and you listen to this podcast, please reach out to me at Mandy Slutsker, because I want to hear from you. I find it so fascinating when people watch it overseas because they get it through HeyU, and sometimes it's different. And sometimes, you know, I just find it so interesting.
We get the unedited versions. We get the swear words. We get no bleeps.
Ah, jealous.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And we will talk soon.
Okay. Bye.